And welcome to a new installment of the Career Vision podcast. Career Vision, who is the, they're in the title. They are based out of Glen Ellyn, and they help young people find their career paths with aptitude tests, trying to figure out what they like, what they might be good at. And they also help professionals who are looking for a career change. So learn more about them at careervision.org. And speaking of career changes, my guest today is going through a little bit of his own career change. Dave Ennett, sports director at WGN Radio and voice of Northwestern Athletics. Hi.
Hey, Mike.
You've kind of been doing a lot of these lately about kind of the retrospective of your careers, and I think this one's going to go even deeper than that. Are you ready for that?
Well, we'll see, I guess.
Okay, because this is how it starts out. Every one of these podcasts starts with a shout-out to your high school. So, a shout-out to Dave Ennett's high school.
My high school is actually no longer bears the name
that really?
it had when I was in high school. It was Woodrow Wilson High School in Washington, D.C. It is now Jackson Reed High School. The name was changed a few years ago.
Okay.
When there was a move to rename it because of some less than positive aspects of the Woodrow Wilson presidency and accusations of racism, and so they changed the name.
They should have changed it to Dave Ennett High School.
No, I think they're
fine. Do you have your own wing yet?
No.
Okay,
no,
so what were you like in high school?
What was I like in high school? Well, I loved sports.
Yeah.
I loved to play sports. Not varsity. I wasn't really good enough.
What sports were you playing?
I played a ton of baseball and football, just sandlot stuff. And we didn't have organized leagues like you have today.
Yeah.
But pretty much every day after school, every night, we would all go to this one park and we'd play until our cell phones rang? No. Until we knew it was starting to get dark and it was time to go home and have dinner.
What were some of the other things you were interested in?
Well, I mean, I was always interested in broadcasting.
Yeah.
And I was also, I did some other things. I had a paper route.
Mm-hmm.
I liked to read when I was younger,
yeah,
and still do. But you know, I was hanging with my friends and doing what
you were keeping busy, right?
Yeah, I was always busy.
That's
always busy, and I don't remember a whole lot of downtime.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do as a career when you were that young?
I did. I did. I think that if you talk to most people who go into this business, especially broadcasters, they will tell you that it's something they wanted to do when they were kids.
Yeah.
And usually did it to the annoyance of their friends when you were playing ball.
Were you calling it as you were playing?
Yeah, occasionally, yes.
Yeah.
We used to play step ball where you would have one guy would be in the street, and then one guy would be throwing the ball off the steps,
mm-hmm,
and then if it bounced once, it was a single. If it bounced twice, it was a double. And if it went all the way to the other side of the street, it was a home run. And of course, I would be the guy calling the play-by-play on that, even
nice,
though I was playing the field. So, yeah, I mean, things like that. I grew up in front of the television, like a lot of people of my generation did. It was a treat when I could stay up and watch Johnny Carson. I always was a fan of the late night hosts,
mm-hmm,
and I always kind of thought that's something I could do.
Who were the play-by-play announcers that you were listening to and enjoyed listening to back then?
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember the network guys, like, you know, the Ray Scotts and the Joe Garagiola's,
mm-hmm,
doing the baseball game of the week. And locally, there were no, like, legendary – well, one guy who was on in Washington, and this is kind of interesting, there's a guy named Johnny Holiday who was actually a rock and roll disc jockey who, like, introduced the Beatles at Candlestick Park.
Wow.
And Johnny did the Washington Senators – pre and post game shows.
Okay.
And I always enjoyed his work, and I listened to his morning show his morning radio show, and he had a lot of athletes who would be on the show with him, Rick Barry, Denny McClain, after he came to Washington.
Yeah.
And the irony is that Johnny, to this day, is my he's my counterpart at Maryland.
That's
he is still
crazy.
And Johnny's
well
into his 80s and broadcasting Maryland football and basketball. So we cross paths sometimes three times a year, and, you know, usually at least once or twice. And he's a wonderful guy, and he sounds just as good today as he ever did.
That, I think I remember, this was a couple of years ago, we were in the elevator, and I asked you about who has the longer, the longest 10 years in the Big Ten. So it's him, it's you, and then who else is in there?
Don Fisher at Indiana, I think, is
still
52 years as the voice of the Hoosiers.
Wow.
And still going strong.
Holy cow.
And there are a couple, you know, we have some new guys in the conference now who I'm not quite as familiar with how long they've been around. But Johnny's been there a long time, and although they weren't in the Big Ten for all that
time.
Right,
right.
But Don's been, he's the dean of the Big Ten guys, no question.
Gotcha. So after high school, you're starting to look towards broadcasting. What was the next step?
Well, I mean, I was looking at college,
yeah,
and I was all set to go to Boston University. And in fact, they had my money. Boston. Yeah, I mean, it looked like I liked Boston. I wanted to be in a big city.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in a big market. I wanted a school that had a good communications program, and they have an excellent one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all set to go there. And then I had applied to Northwestern, but I didn't really know much about it. But one of my best friend's dad had gone to Northwestern.
Okay.
And so he was going to go there, and he was coming out to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents said, well, and I'd been accepted. And believe me, today I wouldn't have been, but this was many years ago.
Yeah.
And so my parents said, well, yeah, if you want to go out and visit, you can. And I've told this story, and people still kind of, I don't know if they really buy it, but this is the true story. I went out with my friend to Chicago, mm-hmm. came out on a weekend in April, because May is the deadline, right, make your final decision.
Wow.
I came out to see the campus, and it was that one weekend in April where it's 80 degrees and sunny the entire weekend. So we arrive on campus on Friday afternoon, and we go out, and they're on the beach, and kids are out there throwing frisbees. Everybody's, you know, just having a great time. It's a big beach party. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why do I want to go to Boston and freeze? I can come here, and it's beautiful. There's this great beach.
The one time Chicago weather sold somebody.
I've never seen a day like that in 50 years. I've never seen a day as nice as that again.
Oh, they tricked you.
They tricked me, but at the same time, I'm forever grateful for that quirk, because look, my life changed, and in many ways, by deciding to attend Northwestern. And it's aside from marrying my wife, it's the best decision I ever made.
That was a great
like
way
that,
to do that.
Like
that's good stuff. I have to take notes. I think it was last year we were at the Lakefront Stadium as they were getting things ready, and you had been pointing out to there were the rocks that are on the shore path there, or on the
yep.
lakefront there. It was mm-hmm. one of your traditions, and I didn't even know you had gone to Northwestern at the time. So at Northwestern, as a student, what were you getting involved in? What was that experience like for you then?
First thing I did on that Friday when we arrived on campus after going to the beach,
mm-hmm.
the next thing was to go and see the student radio station.
Yeah.
Because Boston had a very nice one, and a chance to get hands-on experience in college, I think, is so important.
Big time.
And they have a really good station, WNUR, at Northwestern. And so I went and saw the facilities and talked to some people there. Said, yeah, you'll get an opportunity to get on the air here. And so that was a big selling point for me, the chance I could actually jump in and get some experience. And they did not have, back then, great facilities. They're much better now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, remember, journalism has changed a lot. But in the early 70s, their journalism school was really about print.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was going into the school. It was then the School of Speech, okay. which had the radio, television, film department.
Gotcha.
So some of my early courses were, I remember I took a course in interpretation taught by Charlton Heston's sister. And it was about, it was basically how to do a dramatic reading. I took public speaking, which to this day is one of the best college courses I ever took.
Oh, I bet.
And I took film criticism, and I remember I had to write a paper on a specific genre of film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose disaster film, which was very big back then. And I remember one day I took the L from Evanston down to the Loop. And back then, the movie theaters, first of all, the Loop was full of movie theaters.
Yeah.
And they were showing movies all day long. So I took the L down early in the morning, and I went to, might have been the Chicago Theater. I mean,
oh,
they showed
yeah.
movies back then. And I, or the State Lake Theater. And I went in and I saw, like, at 9 o'clock in the morning, The Poseidon Adventure. And then went and saw Airplane. So
the spoof,
no,
right?
Airport 75.
Right.
Which was the spoof?
The Airplane. Spoof is Airplane.
So this was Airport 75.
Okay.
And then I saw like the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, where it's a subway train.
A lot of exciting movies.
But this is in one day.
Yeah.
I went back and forth twice on the L to Evanston, went to the library, did some research, started my paper, and got it done. But yeah, I mean, it was it was great. I learned a lot, but it was ultimately, I don't think film was where I was headed.
Do you remember what your first shift was like at the college radio station?
I didn't do a disc jockey shift.
Uh-huh.
I did news and sports. And so I think they would give the freshmen sort of the odd hours or the times no one else wanted to work. So it'd be like Sunday nights at 9 o'clock, something like
somebody
that.
Somebody was listening.
Yeah, well, I hope. And then I would work on football, and eventually I got a chance to do some football and basketball play-by-play.
Yeah.
And I remember going to do an Evanston High School basketball game, and they were playing somewhere out northwest. And so we're driving, and we get stuck in traffic. I had no idea how you navigate the traffic around the northwest suburbs, like on a Friday night.
Gosh,
arrived at the game. It was already underway. Our broadcast location's in the bleachers, so we're having to push our way past fans and students with our equipment.
Right.
You know, it was not good. I remember working on a Northwestern Iowa football game at Iowa.
Oh, wow.
On a Saturday, obviously. And so on Saturday morning, the guys who I was doing the game with, and I don't know if there were three or four of them, piled into my Honda Civic, which was the original Honda Civic, was about, I don't know, from me to you, how we're sitting right now. It was, and we're driving out to Iowa. I've never been there. It's about
taking Route 88 most of the way.
I don't even know if 88 existed back then. We get there and have trouble finding the stadium,
uh-huh.
and somehow got on the air and got it done. And some of the guys I did games with ended up working in Chicago broadcasting as well.
Who were some of those guys?
Ron Gleason, who became the he was one of the first guys at the Score and became
was
program director, I think, at BBM. And Ron and I used to do games together. And there were some others who were there as well. And, you know, I had a great time doing it. I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, it's sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And
mm-hmm.
now I see the current generation of student broadcasters who still do the games. First of all, they dress much better than we did. They have computers, which didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
They're much better prepared for the games than we were. Now, part of that is there's much more information out there today than there was back then.
Yeah.
I mean, you got like a one-sheeter on a game. I mean, that was about it. You didn't get these just reams and reams of information and websites and stats, and that didn't exist back then.
All the research you could do, like, a week or two weeks ahead of time.
You just had to try to find it yourself and maybe do the math yourself if it came to that.
What were some of the skills you were learning? Because that's like on-the-job learning right there. Were you learning during that time before you were doing it professionally?
Well, I think it was probably organization was a big part of it, because I think, like a lot of college kids, I wasn't the most organized guy in the world. And
I still am not.
Don't say that. I know that's not true. But if you're going to broadcast a football game or a basketball game, you have to be buttoned up pretty well. And so I learned that kind of the hard way. I mean, it's sort of trial and error to a certain extent. And the one thing I mentioned, public speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I think I really learned is that being able to speak into a microphone, it's a privilege, and it's also something that I've never taken lightly. And so anytime the mic was on, I was very conscious of it. I don't think I was ever especially nervous, but I was always concerned about presenting the right message, being on my game, for lack of a better term.
And being a representative of the program that you're there with,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yes.
So, I mean, the kind of leading into what I was going to ask next, when did you start feeling comfortable being on the microphone? Because I mean, I wanted to do play-by-play forever, and it took me a long time to really kind of – it took tons of reps.
Well, play-by-play, I don't think I got comfortable. I don't think I was – especially comfortable while I was in college. And I mean, I was not that I was nervous, but I just think I didn't know a lot of the tricks I know now. And so I actually have some of the tapes.
Yeah.
And I played them. This is several years ago. I played some for my wife, and she said, "I can't believe that they ever hired you to do this."
Really?
Because, I mean, but I wasn't alone. I mean, I listened to the guys I was broadcasting with, and it takes reps. It takes, and that's why when people ask me today, what do you need to do? You just need to do it, because it's repetition, and it's listening to yourself. And that's one thing I have always done. I've always listened to tapes, and I do think it makes a difference. I think it helps you. And I beat myself up a lot. And I've talked to some of my colleagues in town who do play-by-play, and they'll be concerned about a blown call or something. Or we all have those. We all have calls we wish we could have back, but you can't. There's no backspace. There's no delete button. When you say it, it goes out. And so you can't beat yourself up. The only thing you can do is try to do it better the next time. And I've told people this who do this for a living.
Right.
Just let it go. Let it go, and don't worry about it.
Let it go.
Just try to do it better and learn from it, and try to do it better next time.
Right. And because if you're comfortable the next time, you're not dwelling on it, the listener isn't going to remember.
And that's the thing. You beat yourself up more than it's in the listener's ear and out quicker than it, but it stays with you.
Yeah. And doing it for radio is different than TV, because you're the one that is painting that picture for the listener.
Yep.
So and getting used to that, what was that like for you?
Well, the biggest thing is you have to remember that, that they can't see the scoreboard. They can't see that it's 2nd and 7 and that the score is 33-14. And or how much time is left. And I think the biggest thing young broadcasters have to overcome, or student broadcasters certainly, is remembering that you are the eyes and ears of the listener, and you have to really, if you get nothing else in. And listen, I've been guilty of it. I remember maybe my first or 2nd or 3rd year doing Northwestern football, getting an angry letter from a listener saying, "I timed you from this point to this point in the game. You never gave the score once."
Oh my gosh.
And you know, I'm sure there are sometimes, given the nature of the game, that you don't have that chance.
Right.
But you have to find a way to get that score in there. I'll tell you, just not to digress, but a guy who does that very well is John Weidemann with the Blackhawks. John repeatedly gives the score, gives the time remaining, and the period. And those are the basics, you know, that those are the things you have to know.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, they may be less interested in who the quarterback is, who is the receiver who caught that pass, who's the left tackle, but they want to know what the score is and how much time there is
and
where on the field is the ball.
Right, and because someone could be tuning in at any point of the game, right?
Yeah.
So they want to know at that point.
Right.
You mentioned the getting hired for the job. What was that like for you?
Well, so my – well, that wasn't my first job.
Okay, so yeah, what was next?
So while I was a student at Northwestern – We got word that WBBM Radio was hiring a bunch of students to come in and answer phones in the newsroom. And so I went to the Illinois News Broadcasters Association convention, I think in Peoria. I'm not totally sure. And I introduced myself to the news director. Now, it just so happened I was doing an internship at the time in the same building at Channel 2, which probably gave me a leg up, even though I didn't really have much to do in the internship. But I went to the news director at this convention, introduced myself, and then shortly after that, they hired a number of us to come in 4 to midnight on weeknights and answer phones for the minimum wage. Ask me what the minimum wage was.
What was the minimum wage?
$2.50 an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
So I would come in from Evanston. I worked 4 to midnight, I don't know, 3 or 4 nights a week. But that was the foot in the door. That's what you want, right? Mm-hmm. So that started it. And eventually on vacations, I would be used as in relief for the next position up in the newsroom was desk assistant, which is colloquially a copy person where you'd rip the teletype wires and eventually writing some news and all the while trying to weasel my way into the sports department, which is what I ended up doing.
How did you weasel your way in?
Well, the sports director was a guy by the name of Brad Palmer, who I think people not only knew from radio, but later from TV. He was the professor on Channel 7 up until the time he retired. And Rich King, who later worked with us here at WGN-TV, Rich was the managing editor in the newsroom and also did weekend sports. So I would help those guys any way I could. And sometimes Brad would want someone to go out and cover something in the evening, and I'd raise my hand.
You weren't saying no to opportunities.
Either. I never said no.
Yeah.
So anytime they asked me to do anything, I would do it. And I was there at a time where, and there's a little irony in this, I guess, but they were picking up more play-by-play sports, and I was there. And so they gave me more responsibility in sports, where I was still working in news, and ultimately moved me full-time into sports. And so, and I've been in sports ever since.
Ever since. Wow. So, and now going back to the job at Northwestern. So how did that come about?
Well, I had been at that station. Then I came to WGN.
Yeah.
And I was the assistant program director here after doing sports. And one of the things that our program director at the time, or our general manager at the time, Dan Fabian, wanted to do was add college football for the Saturdays when the Cubs weren't playing, or if there was a Cubs night game, to have football in the afternoon. So I was given the assignment of trying to get college football and trying to get Northwestern. He liked the idea of Northwestern. It was a good fit. And they were on a small suburban station at the time. So
what was the station?
I think it was 820. Well, not a small, I think it was 820 AM, I think is where 8, They were somewhere in the 800s.
Gotcha.
But they wanted to be on a bigger station, mm-hmm. and certainly to be on GM would be great for them. And the understanding was I would broadcast, I would be the play-by-play voice.
Yeah.
And so this was 1988, and at the same time, I got offered a job to go back over to the other station as the sports director.
Oh.
And I had a very tough decision to make.
What were you weighing there?
I would get back on the air.
Yeah.
And on a full-time basis. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, there was a little more. I would be back on Morning Drive doing sports, which I had done here.
Yeah.
And so there were some other things. My wife was expecting our first child at the time. Mm-hmm. So I thought lifestyle-wise, it might be a good move. And so I took that job. Northwestern came to GN. Mm-hmm. They were here for 2 years. And I was over there. I get a call from our friend Lou Canellis, who was working for a radio syndicator at the time. And Lou said, and they had the rights to Northwestern. They said, hey, do you guys want to pick up Northwestern? And do you want to do the games? And I said, well, sure, let me talk to my bosses. And the agreement was to do it for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, yeah, we'll try it out. We did it for a year, and 1 year became 2 years. Anyway, now 36 years later, I'm still doing it. But after they went to the Rose Bowl in 95, they went back to WGN, and the program director here, mm-hmm. a lady by the name of Tisa Lasorte, gave me the opportunity to come with them, become the sports director, do sports on Bob Collins' show in the morning, and do the Northwestern games. And that was 1996, and I've been here ever since.
Wow. So as a sports director, what was your day-to-day like that as sports director, and what has it been, you know, since then?
Well, it's evolved a little bit over the years, but some of it is deciding where your priorities are in terms mm-hmm. of on-site coverage, credentials, sort of helping to coach a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And nurture the staff. And we had a larger sports staff. And when I started here, for instance, we had the Bears, we had the Cubs, we had Northwestern, we did a nightly sports talk show.
Right.
And so I kind of had a hand in all of that and continued to for a long time,
mm-hmm.
even when after the Cubs left, still had the Blackhawks, Northwestern. And so some of it's administrative, some of it's the stuff that goes with a managing position and managing people, which I always found to be challenging but enjoyable. I always liked it.
You have a pretty cool coaching tree, too. I know we used to talk about, and this is going back, you know, 4 years when we started filming, you know, Northwestern preview videos, and you would tell me about how you had Cap, you had Waddle, and that you guys were playing games in the hallways. So
I wasn't playing the games.
You weren't playing the games.
Cap and Waddle pretty much just I love those guys, but they would get ready for their show by playing a game they called office ball in the sports office back at the Tribune Tower, where they would have a bat and a ball and broke stuff.
So, what kind of stuff did they break?
Well, we had an analog clock up on the wall, which is kind of important in radio to know what time it is.
Important,
when you need to be in the studio. And suffice it to say, we ended up putting up a clock that you would find in an old school high school gym with a cage over it so it could not be broken. And we had a lot of fun. There was a lot of mischief going on, mm-hmm. a lot of pranking, but it was all in good fun. And it wasn't just in sports either.
No.
I mean, that's kind of the way. You had some people on the staff who I think enjoyed that too. Around the station.
And do you kind of take a lot of pride in kind of developing people that were under you and
absolutely folks. Well, Andy Mazur, who's going to take my spot here, and I'm not going to take credit for developing Andy, but we brought Andy in as another sports voice on the station, and then he ended up becoming part of the Cubs booth, traveling with the Cubs, and would fill in doing play-by-play when Pat Hughes would take an inning off, and Andy ended up being hired as the radio voice of the San Diego Padres.
That's right.
Did that job for many years and then came back here. You know, some other, obviously, you mentioned Cap and Waddle. Those guys have done well. We hired an intern who became a producer named Mike Farron, who's become a big voice on MLB Network Radio and Sirius XM. Corey Provis, who came in and replaced Andy, now the TV voice of the Minnesota Twins, another guy I'm very proud of. Judd Surratt, we brought Judd in from the Wolves to do our Blackhawk stuff, and I'm not saying that I necessarily am responsible for this, but we brought Judd along. He's now the TV voice of the Boston Bruins.
Right.
Granted, he had some bloodlines, I think, that probably didn't hurt. And Joe Brand.
Another guy
we brought in and have developed, and certainly Kevin Powell. And you love seeing people like that. I work with Chris Bowden over on the TV side.
Yeah.
I brought Chris over to the other radio station, and he replaced me there. And now we work together.
I didn't realize that.
We work together often on TV. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of you do take pride in seeing people that you've hopefully helped along the way. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm leaving some people out, but just to give you an idea, that is a source of pride. I've always tried to help young broadcasters like people helped me. Rich King, Chuck Swirsky here brought me into GN for the first time.
Is that right?
Oh, sure. And then there were the old guard here when I started, which was Jack Brickhouse and Jack Rosenberg, who was a wonderful guy who basically ran radio, TV, sports, GN for so many years, and Harry Carey, who I did a talk show with over on the other station, and occasionally at WGN too. And Harry was always great to me. So you always try to kind of pay it back a little bit, and I've tried to do that.
I'm sorry. I really appreciate you giving me so much time to talk about this. I just have a couple more questions. And really, we could do like a whole season of stories from you from so many different aspects. But you did the morning show, too, for a really long time. Mm-hmm. How did that begin? And what was that like for you, the beginning? And how have you kind of, you know, how's that been for you since?
Well, I've done morning radio, figured it out pretty much for something like 40 years with only a little break in there where I didn't.
Yeah.
And the first morning show I was on WGN was Wally Phillips. And, you know, I said earlier that I didn't tend to be nervous in front of the mic.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came in to interview for my first job at WGN in 1984, came in and met with Chuck, who I knew, and he brought me in. And then Dan Fabian and Lorna Gladstone, may they rest in peace. They were the program director and assistant at the time. And so I was nervous to meet them. I knew certainly of Dan's reputation, wonderful guy, brilliant guy. But then they took me in to meet Wally because the job entailed doing sports on Wally's show. And Wally was such a legend, and he was so dominant in the market back then. And I had obviously heard him for so many years, but I had never met him. And Wally couldn't have been nicer. I went into his office at Bradley Place, and we had a nice conversation. I like to think we hit it off. I was then brought in to do a week audition.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I was in the studio with Wally, you have to remember back then, like today, when I'm in the studio with Bob in the morning, he and I are the only ones actually in the studio. And then on the other side of the glass are Joe and Haley, the producers.
Right.
Steve's in the newsroom. And Amanda's in the traffic bunker.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you went in the studio at Bradley Place, Studio A, and you had a sound person who would make for sound effects. You would have a record turner. You would have two news people on the other side of the glass. Wow. You would have Max or Orion doing the business farm reports. You would have, I believe, two producers. And then there was the traffic helicopter and Wally.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, it was to a kid, and even though I wasn't necessarily a young kid at that point, I was still in my 20s, and to be sitting alongside probably the biggest legend in Chicago radio was a little
overwhelming.
Yeah. Yes, it was. But I got comfortable with it. And what I learned, you know, you learn the different hosts' hot buttons and what they like, how they like to engage.
Yeah.
And you learn their kind of their idiosyncrasies. And you could tell with Wally when you were going too long or he wanted to he didn't want to interrupt you, but at the same time you could sense when it was time to step back and let him talk. And I found the same thing with Bob Collins. Bob was a little less in the studio. It was a little less formal than it was with Wally. Less formal when Spike got in there.
Yeah.
And I would say the thing that's changed for me is that as the business has changed, as media has changed, I would come on and do a laundry list of scores every morning, all the American League scores nationally. If you didn't do them, then, man, the phones would be ringing. People would be saying, why didn't you mention the West Coast scores?
Because that's how they got them.
That's how you got them back then. And today, by the time I come on in the morning, most scores are already, if you wanted a score, you got it.
Right. You're getting a push alert.
So it's more about the stories.
Yeah.
It's more about the information and beyond the score.
And this will be the last one from me. So talking to a young person in this day and age of media and sports broadcasting, I'm sure you've talked to several, you know, young professionals about this, but what advice would you have for, or a piece of advice would you have for that person that is looking to do what you do?
Well, first of all, don't be dissuaded by the competition, because it's going to be competitive. But I know an awful lot of people who just have stayed with it and succeeded and getting opportunities at a relatively young age, because there's so much media out there, and there's so many, whether it's streaming broadcasts, whatever, there's a need for bodies there and there's a need for content. But I would say this, don't necessarily come to WGN. Not that you can't, not that it hasn't happened. And we have people here who started here and are starting here, but it doesn't happen very often. You need the reps, as I mentioned earlier. And the other thing is, don't say no. Don't raise your hand, because the thing that's disappointed me at times, Mike, has been when people will tell me, you know, they'll want an opportunity. I'll say, okay, well, I need somebody for this on Saturday night. Well, that's when a lot of sports happens, right? Nights, weekends, and that's what you have to do, is accept the fact you're not going to have the best schedule in the world, all right, if you want to do this. But embrace that. Don't look at it as a negative, because if you want to be part of it, you gotta just kind of deal with that aspect of it. It's workable. My wife has been with me. We just had our 40th wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
And thank you. When she's seen me work every different hour shift. I mean, that whatever you can work, mornings obviously, but then late nights on TV and games that go late and late night road trips and turn around and come in.
Yeah.
It's part of the business. It's not awful. You can deal with it. Just if you don't take those opportunities, you're going to be missing out.
And it, like you were saying, team effort there, right, with your partner.
Absolutely.
That whole thing.
Yes.
And I think one thing I have found is the Chicago sports media community is there for each other. It's one of the most supportive, you know, professional communities there is. So that's another thing too, is you put a good foot forward with a lot of people, they're going to try to help you in every way possible.
The biggest thing I have tried to do is, you know, sometimes I'll see something on social media with one broadcaster taking a shot at another broadcaster, something they did on the air or whatever. This business is too hard to do that. And anyone who is in the business, they need your support. And if you're a colleague or you're simply a counterpart and maybe you don't even know them, I don't think I've ever ripped another broadcaster on the air, nor would I.
Because you know what they're dealing with.
I know what they're dealing with. Yeah. And people make mistakes and people struggle. So you support them when you can and move on.
That's a great way to end it here. Dave, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. Thanks to Career Vision for sponsoring this podcast. And hey, thank you again. I'll be seeing you around.
I hope so.
Definitely. I'm going to come see you at Northwestern.
Okay. Well, come up anytime. You're always welcome. And hopefully I can still get past the front door here.
Oh, you got me. Just shoot me a text.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Dave.